We're on item number 15, oyster replenishment plan. Mr. Button, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioner and members of the commission. All right, this is a discussion item for the 2020 oyster replenishment and restoration plan and the associated procurement procedures. So that's that important component of this plan. I'm going to run through sort of the background and then go over where the funding for this plan is coming from, and then I'll walk through sort of the individual projects. Feel free to interject if there's any questions in between, but I'll probably answer them as we go along.
And for the record, our Chief of Administration and Finance, Sherry Crocker, has joined us to make sure that the procurement matters don't slide by me. So therefore, proceed, sir.
Thank you. So the implementation of harvest effort controls and an effective management strategy have really led to a sort of consistent public oyster harvest for really the last 5 years or so. We've sort of gone up substantially from the early days in 2000. And we're actually, right now, the five-year average of the public ground harvest is very similar to the much longer-running public ground harvest going all the way back to 1957, 1958. So the five-year average is right around 255,000 bushels from public ground, and that long-term average going back all the way to the 50s was actually just 257,000 bushels. So we're actually, the public ground harvest is pretty close today to where it has been historically. There have been some substantial ups and downs over that time, but the long-term average, we're in pretty good shape where we are right now. although part of that long-term average coming up to where we are now, part of it is related to the oyster resource recovering. We've been putting in a lot of work for decades now into restoring and replenishing public oyster grounds. And you can actually see that the population of oysters has recovered during that time frame. But also the gear efficiency and harvest effort has gone up at that same time frame. So as oysters recovered, more people came to the fishery, and hence more oysters were harvested. This is actually a long-term landings going all the way back to the 1880s of landings in millions of bushels of oysters. You can see that a lot of these, when millions of bushels were coming off of oyster grounds, this is public and private combined, a lot of what was going on was seed transfer from private public ground to private ground. So there were hundreds of thousands of bushels of seed moved to private ground and reported as market harvest. And that's when you're getting in these multi-million bushels of landing. So the public harvest was higher, but a lot of that harvest on private ground started out as seed oysters on public ground and was transferred. This is, again, when the oyster disease took off, and really that was when the decline happened with disease. And, again, this is when that sort of recovery in the 1990s started to where we are today. a lot of that harvest is dependent on the current today's harvest on public ground is related to past year spat sets. And also the whole fishery, both public and private, is very interconnected. This is actually a longer-term look at there's an attachment that shows the breakdown of traditional versus wild harvest. So this goes back to that 2000 time period. And what you see in gray is the number of bushels that make up the total harvest coming from public ground there. What you see in yellow is broken down by calendar year through our mandatory reporting system. We can look at the amount of harvest coming off of private ground that's caught using traditional gear types, so scrapes, dredges, hand tongs, that sort of thing. And that's that yellow portion there. And this brown portion is sort of, there's sometimes a common misperception that a lot of private ground harvest is all hatchery-based. So this is actually going back onto our mandatory reporting, and this is the part that's actually containerized, and based on the gear that's harvested, it is pretty likely to have been started in a hatchery. So the reality is that still, even today, the majority of oyster ground harvest is coming primarily through natural recruitment. You can really sort of see that they go up and down together, and a big reason for that is that water quality, events such as 2018, where water quality was really poor, affect all aspects of the fishery, and they all really support each other. And that's one of the reasons that for a long time now, both public and private fisheries have sort of fluctuated together. A lot of the factors that negatively impact one also negatively impact other, and vice versa. and they all sort of support each other and provide different types of product at different times so that the oyster fishery as a whole is healthier when all aspects are doing well. And restoration efforts through improving spat sets and water quality help the public fishery, the private fishery, and all types of harvest there. So I touched on the importance of spat sets. I'm just going to go over some couple of years of history here on where we have been on bay-wide spat sets on public ground. And part of the way, one of the most important ways that the Commission manages its public ground is tried by replenishing the harvest areas and maintaining a certain level of shell volume on the areas open to harvest. And what that allows is actually physically room for oysters to attach to. So if there isn't a certain amount of shell on the bottom, literally there's not physically enough room for new recruitment. So because of that, we try to maintain a sort of a minimum shell base of 5 liters of shell per meter squared, and ideally a base of 10 liters per meter squared. And if you sort of visualize the podium here is about a meter squared, 10 liters of shell would be really just one layer of oyster shell thick. So it's not really that much, but by having that sort of minimum threshold, you actually have enough room to take advantage of spat sets when they do exist, and then 2 to 3 years later, that's when you can actually see those benefits coming in through the public fishery. So this is 2017, and you can see that the spat sets here, this is sort of an average year. Again, you can see this is, keep an eye on the scale here. This is the number of spat per square meter. This is that 5-liter threshold, and that's that sort of 10-liter threshold. You can really see you don't get into these high spat sets until you get sort of above a certain level of shell base in most years. So that was 2017. 2018, as you recall, was the wettest year ever in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. And as a result, sort of the bay-wide average spat sets weren't great. In most areas, there were a couple highlights where you still do see pretty good recruitment. On recent shell plants, the fossil or reef shell that the replenishment department, the commission plants throughout the state, those areas in the lower James River, as well as some areas in the Tangier and Pocomoke Sound that had recent replenishment work, still were able to capitalize on that spat set and get decent numbers. There were some areas that did have good shell volume that still, just because of the conditions, didn't get that good spat set. But the good news was is because of those funding increases that we saw, a lot of those areas this year in 2019, in addition with the increased funding and more replenishment effort that we did in the 2018 and 2019, we planted over 1 million bushels bay-wide on harvest areas throughout the bay. That's about 30,000 bushels or so on one barge right there. We plant that in about 4 hours. So that's a lot of shell going overboard. But we were well positioned to actually take advantage of one of the best spat sets we've seen in recent history in 2019. So we had the highest average spat set that we've seen in 12 years of our sort of current monitoring. And it's likely a higher spat set. Sort of our monitoring methods are a little bit different, so we can't say that definitively. But I'm calling it the best spat set ever. And we did have, because of that increased effort, we were well-suited. There was more acreages with at least that 5-liter threshold of shell on the bottom and even more acreages with that 10-liter threshold. And then with this plan, we're hoping to expand the number of acreages that will be ready on the bottom should we be blessed with a good spat set this year. So I'm going to go through the, sort of the funding sources. And I just wanted to highlight a little bit more background there on this funding issue. Is there was some funding really wasn't consistent for the replenishment department until the fiscal year 2013, and that was when the General Assembly appropriated $2 million for replenishment. There's been a couple of increases since then. In fiscal year 19 and 20, oyster funding in total for general funds was increased to close to $4 million. And at that time, there was a budget language distinction that separated replenishment dollars from restoration dollars. And we've interpreted that as replenishment money, general funds, are spent on areas that are open to harvest, and restoration funds are generally spent on areas that are closed to harvest or sanctuary areas. VMRC, whenever possible, and our department, whenever possible, tries to. We had some discussions earlier in the meeting on mobilization costs, that whenever we're in an area doing replenishment or restoration, wherever possible and feasible, we try to lower the per unit volume of cost. So if we're planting shell on a sanctuary and a harvest area in the same area, the mobilization costs for both are lowered, and we can get more substrate deployed if we have a total larger project, be it replenishment and restoration. So an increase in replenishment funding will make our restoration dollars go further, and an increase in restoration funding, whenever possible, will make our replenishment dollars go further. And we try to combine those aspects wherever we can. In addition to those general funds, there's been a budget request right now in the governor's budget, which we support, of $10 million. Right now, I believe it's in capital funds. There's some discussions underway. I've included that as in a portion of this plan. Again, it's sort of working its way through right now, but I wanted to include that funding source here. And that's focused primarily on restoration and on the 2014 Chesapeake Bay Agreement, which outlines sort of broad environmental goals for the Chesapeake Bay. One of those outcomes, as outlined in the Bay Agreement, is for to continually increase finfish and shellfish habitat, water quality benefits from restored oyster populations, restore native oyster habitat and populations in 10 tributaries by 2025, and ensure their protection. So five of these tributaries are in Virginia, and the majority of those capital funds or general funds would be focused on that. But again, wherever possible, we seek to sort of get the most benefit for the whole oyster fishery with all the funding there. So whether it's combining projects for replenishment and restoration purposes. But that's sort of the background on where that capital fund request is from. It's because Virginia is a signatory to this Chesapeake Bay Watershed Agreement, along with all their commonwealths in the watershed, and that will help us to reach that goal there. In addition to those general funds and that capital fund request, VMRC has been the recipient of a settlement from DEQ related to a Superfund site in the eastern branch, or actually in the southern branch of the Elizabeth River. This was a settlement that was specifically an oyster restoration project. It was part of a much larger settlement agreement related to an Atlantic Woods Superfund site there in the southern branch. And this is an oyster restoration component, so that's that $1.5 million there. In the past, we've worked with Nature Conservancy at a number of restoration projects, most recently at Piankatank on the seaside. They'll likely have some funding available to put towards a replenishment plan this year. That's where that $221,000 comes from. Non-general funds, that's primarily from the special oyster funds, so the user fees that oyster harvesters are required to pay. Those are the general funds that will be expended this year, and that's $150,000. And then VMRC has been able to pursue a number of federal grants through NOAA. And sort of this is an approximate there. They're sort of still working their way through the process. But over this year and the next 2 years, they should be approximately $500,000 to $1.6 million. So this is a very substantial plan this year. And I don't anticipate being able to potentially implement 100% of all this funding in a single year, but I wanted to include sort of the maximum amount of projects that we would likely be able to do in the 2020 season as part of this plan should funding fall into place. So that's where the money comes in, and here's how we're planning on spending it. So it's starting in the James River. Generally, the cost-benefit ratio for moving wild seed oysters has been relatively low. So we get a pretty good return on shell planting, give or take 7-to-1 back. Seed has usually been less than that. But over the last 2 years, staff has been working with the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee, developing a plan to make that seed transport more cost effective. So we've developed a rotational harvest strategy similar to what PRFC has done in some areas. We've had better luck with the freshets than they have. In three tributaries to the Potomac, the Cone, the Nominai, and the Yukamako. The first two tributaries, the Yukamako and the Cone, were planted in 2018 and 2019 with approximately 5,000 bushels. The first area should be open to harvest this year. We'll be planning on planting approximately 5,000 bushels of seed taken from the James River in the Nominee. The seed that we're planning on moving this year will likely come from a shell plant that we've done in 2017, 2018, and 2019 again that received very high recruitment. So the hand tong areas that are normally where seed has gotten, where we've acquired seed in the past, it's usually more costly to pay a harvester to hand tong the seed, transport it by truck to these areas. And there hasn't been anyone interested in doing it for the price that VMRC is willing to offer or SMAC is willing to support for moving that seed. But we've been able to work on this shell plant in the Nansman River and move seed from there. And it's been so cost effective that we've expanded that program last year to two other areas, the Rappahannock River and a portion of Pocomoke Sound that didn't get good spat sets. So we're planning on doing that again this year. And are proposing moving 10,000 bushels to areas 7 and 8 in the Rappahannock. Those are not in a rotation per se. They're sort of part of a put-and-take fishery, so we usually like to put something back before we open those areas, and they're historically sort of low recruitment. And then an area several miles from the Virginia-Maryland line, the Pocomoke Sound, we moved a small amount of seed there last year. All these areas we've checked are doing well, and we're planning on again on moving approximately 5,000 bushels there. The approximate cost is $6 a bushel, and we're planning on moving about 20,000 bushels to those areas. So that's the proposed James River seed. The Piankatank and Great Wicomico River seed program. In past years, we've managed a little bit of a put-and-take fishery here where private individuals were allowed to harvest a quota set by the Conservation Planning Department and SMAC. And then we're required to plant shell back. Due to low spat set and low per bushel counts, there's probably not going to be a great deal of private interest in this program, and we want to allow these areas, they've started to recover with a good spat set, we want to give them a little more of a time to come back before we open up or take a look at sort of re-implementing that management strategy. In those areas, there is one seed area in the Great Wicomico that would support a limited amount of seed, probably approximately 5,000 bushels, but due to sort of the small nature of it, I think we found that would be in likely the best public interest to transport that further downriver to areas that are open to public harvest, not just private ground, and then replenish that area. Since it's such a small program this year, that would sort of be the most benefit to the greatest number of people there. So we proposed doing that in the Great Wicomico River this year. That would be approximately 5,000 bushels. Again, non-general funds, primarily the user fees, would be used to support that work. get on to the meat of the program here. So again, this is a proposed shell planting. So public beds naturally degrade over time and lose their effectiveness as a substrate for larval attachment. Usually this process takes about 3 to 4 years to sort of natural conditions degrade that shell, and if there's not consistent recruitment, those areas can degrade, harvest effort, add sort of a certain level to that degradement. Obviously, if you're removing living shells, they're not there to support future attachment. And we try to maintain that minimum 5-liter base, and ideally that 10-liter base if we can. The areas that we're proposing to replenish this year, in total there's more than 1,000 acres that need replenishment that are under that 10-liter level. We're in better shape in terms of that 5-liter level. And we are targeting some areas that have been recently opened to harvest. Likely those areas see a depleted level of shell. We're going to be in the area. Usually if we're in the area, it's more cost effective to go ahead and replenish those areas immediately after harvest. It allows the full rotation cycle to come into play and they recover quickly that way. So these are the areas, Tangier and Pocomoke Sound, approximately 200 acres, Great Wicomico, 65 acres, Rappahannock River, 178 acres, Piankatank River, 65, the Chesapeake Bay area, primarily deep rock, this is a Patentong area, approximately 128 acres, the York River, 66.8 acres, and the Lower James River, 564 acres. And a lot of these areas, this would be sort of the maximum we would when we're actually have a final budget, have a final cost. We'll probably trim some of these areas down. But this is sort of the maximum amount of acres that we'd be replenishing in any of these areas. And this would be a combination of general funds for replenishment when we're working on harvest areas, likely general funds for restoration. We do maintain our sanctuary areas. If they're getting naturally degraded, we'd like to keep those areas robust and healthy to provide additional larval transport. And they work as a good sort of natural comparison to make sure that we're managing our harvest areas effectively. We can compare oyster populations from the harvest areas to adjacent sanctuary areas to make sure that our management strategies are working, and that's why we also maintain those areas. And again, whenever possible, we seek to lower that per unit cost by replenishing and restoring jointly whenever we can. We might as well use some of the DEQ settlement here in Elizabeth River. Fine shells, which are sort of the shell fragments when we're actually doing our hydraulic shell dredging operation, are retained by the contractor. In the past, we've been able to use these as a base material when constructing new areas, and it may be a cost-effective strategy to use a portion of that fine shell as a base and then put some alternative substrate on top of that. I'll touch on the alternative substrate project portion of the plan here shortly. So that's the proposed shell planting. Whenever possible, we're going to seek to plant the largest quantity of comparable shells for the lowest possible price. And this would include a combination of house shells, so your shucking house shells, reef shells, as well as the dredge shells there. So shells, any shells that we can get that are of equal quality, we're going to put the most overboard for the lowest price we can get for them. And that's how we plan to proceed with the shell planting for this year. As well as on the seaside of the Eastern Shore, don't want to forget the seaside of the Eastern Shore, very important, beautiful spot. We've worked in the past with Nature Conservancy over there, and actually the last 2 years, I believe, TNC has actually done some replenishment work, so they've actually reshelled areas that are open to harvest. They've been able to do that, and we've actually done some restoration work on sanctuary work, so a little bit of a role reversal with the Nature Conservancy over there. And we're planning on doing, again, a project over there that would be a combination of funds from TNC as well as some restoration-specific funding on some areas open and closed to harvest on the Eastern Shore. So this is the proposed alternative substrate areas. So for two replenishment plans now, there's been a proposal for work on the Pocomoke Sound, the Virginia state line. The first year, there were some permitting issues that caused basically permitting delays. We weren't able to get started until it would have been inopportune to take advantage of every natural spat set. The areas that were in question had some concerns about cross-border poaching, and part of the proposal was to build a sort of large-size substrate poaching-resistant sanctuary that could provide broodstock to other portions of the Pocomoke Sound. We removed any shell resource that was there, moved it further into Virginia onto the harvest areas. The actual deployment on the state line didn't happen. In 2019, all things were looking good. Then we had some staffing issues. Various medical concerns came up. We were a little short-handed. And there was also some contractors that were sort of spread thin working on our expanded replenishment program and restoration program. So that didn't happen. It's looking like the stars are aligning for this year, so we're going to go ahead and include it in this plan. There's funding available. The permits are in place. There should be some staff, possibly some more staff, so we're hopeful to get that off. In the Chesapeake Bay Deep Rock area, again, this would be harvest area. We like to have options just in case there is any sort of issues with the shell dredge that I'm sure folks here remember hearing about. If something does happen, it's an older piece of equipment. We like to have some backup areas that are permitted for alternative substrate if for some reason the shells that we would normally be planting aren't available. So we have some harvest areas that are going to be permitted. That's an area of deep rock there. Two areas in the Rappahannock, Area 1 and Area 2. These are sort of firmer, sandier bottoms where there isn't a large amount of existing shell resource. You can usually plant stone, alternative substrate, crushed granite, concrete, that sort of thing. On areas, you want to plant them on a firmer bottom. Oyster shells, you can sort of get into a softer bottom. They hold up on the surface a little more. But with this alternative substrate, you want to look for sort of a harder, sandier bottom that can support that material. We've done some past planting on harvest areas. It's worked out quite well, and we sort of like to at least continue that to a small scale, and if there is an issue with shell, have the ability to scale that up. So we've had these areas permitted. That includes another area in the Nansman River, the James River, the Nansman Ridge. It's had good recruitment that would be suitable for this as well. And then the restoration portion of the proposed alternative substrate would be in the Elizabeth River Eastern Branch. This was that DEQ settlement. It's approximately 20 acres or so there, and that could actually be counted as a restored tributary if that project is fully implemented this year. And then the majority of the alternative substrate restoration work would be focused in the Piankatank River, using a combination of general funds as well as the NOAA grant money there as well. So that is the proposed alternative substrate planting plan. And this is actually just sort of an overview. If there's any questions on specific areas, I can provide more detailed maps. I have, believe it or not, more than one backup slide. But this just sort of gives you the scope of the replenishment plan this year. So this area up here is the Nominee River. That's where seed is going. Great Wicomico, primarily shell. Rappahannock River is here. Tangier and Pocomoke Sound, Maryland Line right here. York River, this is a harvest area. This was actually an area that's been performing quite well this year. They've been out there for a month, 80 boats working this area, getting a good limit every day after the area had been open to Hantong harvest for a month in November. So this area has been holding up, but we're going to be in the area doing both restoration and replenishment work here, so we're going to reshell that area. Eastern Shore, probably working around Smith Island, Fisherman's Island area over there. Again, James River, Hampton Roads here, Nansman Ridge, and this is the eastern branch of Elizabeth River. So that's sort of the scope and scale of the replenishment program that we'll be undertaking. The Shellfish Management Advisory Committee did approve the 2020 Oyster Replenishment Plan. There was one modification to the seed plant location in the Pocomoke Sound area. I believe SMAC had some concerns about the proximity to the Maryland-Virginia line, and they requested that staff form a subcommittee with SMAC to sort of look at an alternative location. Did that, and the oyster replenishment plan was approved 5-2-2. I believe SMAC was in favor of the substance of the plan, but there were some concerns on the breakdown between restoration and replenishment area. Just there were some members that felt they should have increased replenishment along with the restoration budget, but I think they are understanding that the cost benefits and the benefits to all are mutual, but they were generally in support of the plan as a whole. With that, I'll take any questions, but the staff recommendation requests that the commission approve the 2020 Oyster Replenishment Plan and restoration plan, as well as associated procurement procedures. The Code of Virginia 282550 allows the commission to sort of set prices for certain things and allows a little bit different procurement procedure. So approval of this plan would include approval of the procurement activity for the 2020 replenishment program.
Okay. One question real fast. Sherry, we used to, Tony, y'all may remember, I thought the approval of the plan and the approval of the procurement were two separate motions.
I believe that's how it's.
I think, not complaining, but that's what we're going to do. Because I do remember that. I do remember it. So if, even if we're wrong, we've done it for two. Okay. Mr. Zebra.
Let me ask the council. This is on the docket here for discussion, not a public hearing. So can we vote on it?
I mean, I don't think it's necessarily something the public gets to.
We were talking about funds, public funds.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anybody wanted to comment, they could come. Are you talking about notice?
Right. I mean, this is the, you see, you had all the public hearings ahead, Tom, and here you just have this is a discussion. So it doesn't tell the public that it's going to be voted over anything, but you're just going to discuss it. And you're dealing with millions and millions of dollars of public money.
Yeah. I don't think I have the answer to this off the top of my head. I know I've seen other boards that don't have, like, a full public hearing on budget matters.
It's not a public hearing at all. It's a discussion.
Well, but depending on how, it, like if it was noticed, the fact that it says discussion on the agenda doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, we can't decide today. There's other things to consider.
How was it noticed?
Go ahead, sir. If I may, in the past, it's been usually a discussion item. I think if it's a regulatory change, it requires to have the sort of two commission hearings, is my understanding.
Well, and that's kind of the reason I don't have the answer off the top of my head, because this isn't a regulation, and we have very clear procedures for regulations. But in terms of budgets, I mean, a lot of budget decisions don't even come before the commission.
That's what I was, quite honestly.
So.
We've always brought this before the commission because it's of such a global and important matter that the commissioner himself has never made the overall decision without input from the commission. And the procurement matters are clearly set forth in the code as to how we do what we do. And what we're doing basically is just endorsing the utilization of the appropriate procurement matters. Methods used in the Commonwealth of Virginia. That's based on what I recall after.
Right, and I mean, if there's nothing in the statute that says the commission has to make this decision, the commissioner could do it. Which means it wouldn't need to come here at all.
It's similar to when we bring forth the Recreational Fishing Advisory Board issues. And we approve those. We'll do them on a public hearing, as I recall. They just come, the RFAB makes their decision, brings it before the commission, and we look them over and we approve them. So I think it's basically the same thing. That's what I remember after all these years. It's a great question, obviously, because there's a lot of money involved, but we deal with a lot of money anyway, day to day. I think, but that's what we do. We do the plan first and do the procurement second. So I've got one question, maybe. Dr. Neal and Mr. Branson and I sit also on the Chemical Fisheries Commission, and the question has come up and is still kind of hanging there pertaining to the James River seed stock. What's the status at this juncture on the viability and capability of transferring any seed or providing any seed to Potomac River based on your analysis?
What we've seen based on the most recent stock assessment survey of the seed areas is that the overall shell volume hasn't yet recovered to sort of when that harvest increased, but there has been good recruitment, and we would anticipate seeing that translate to the full resource, including the shell baits that is dependent on sort of future harvest recovering in the spring survey possibly, and definitely by the fall survey. So I would anticipate having the best information for making a determination that it's in full recovery after the spring survey. So what I've been saying is that it would likely wouldn't be a staff recommendation to reopen those areas to out-of-state seed harvest per the condition of the resource.
They'll be very limited out of state as to where they go. Mm-hmm. It won't be, you know, the lottery or lotto. It's going to be where we need it to go, dedicated effort. Mm-hmm. And we'll be very judicious and cautious as to, but I have to ask, I mean, PRFC is kind of, if y'all remember, as far as their plans are concerned, I told them exactly, I wasn't going to promise anything that we would be looking at that. That's kind of why I'm asking that question now. Mm-hmm. So I'm putting you out on a limb, and I want a cautious answer versus one that is appropriate. So, okay, here's what we're going to do. There's a rule that we can move forward as far as the plan is concerned. If something does occur that we determine that it is not, that we have not done according to law, what we'll do is we will come back and we will correct it and we'll do it as we should. But at this juncture, the matter is before the commission for discussion, for action as far as the plan. Mr. Tanker?
I move that we approve the 2020 Oyster Replenishment and Restoration Plan.
Second by Mr. Motion made by Mr. Tanker, second by Mr. Minor. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Now, the procurement, the motion should indicate that we will undertake the procurement measures pursuant to the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia, is what the motion should be. Chair will entertain a motion. Mr. Taggart?
I move to approve the procurement of the replenishment and restoration plan for 2020.
Pursuant to the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Yes, pursuant to the laws of the Commonwealth.
Do you second that motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Minor. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. You can check when you get, then with Ms. Crocker and y'all can get together and make sure that we've done what we're supposed to do correctly, because I don't want APA down here. Anyway.
Just a comment on that.
Yes, sir.
And you know, you've been here forever. Yeah, Mr. Zedrin's question is very viable, but this is how it's been done every year I've been on here.
Correct.
And I mean, and so it's been done this every year you've been on here, too. So I don't know where the lightning will hit you.
I mean, I'll also say, I mean, definitely we need to check and make sure, but if someone wants to request a formal hearing before the commission on this, it's a decision. I don't see why they couldn't.
Yep. Okay.
But I understand where you're coming from.
Good report. Thank you very much.